So thank you. I'm going to be talking about non-locality and entanglement. And by non-locality, I mean violations of Bell inequalities. So I'm really happy to talk about that here because we know that there's the first Bell Prize being awarded. So what better place to talk about this stuff, right? So I'm going to talk about multi-qubit states, which by which I really mean anything more than two-qubit pure states, because we know pretty much of a lot about two-qubit states. In fact, in that case, for pure states, entanglement and non-locality are sort of like two sides of the same coin. So if you have, we know that if there's entanglement, then you get a violation of Bell inequality, and the more entanglement, the more violation you get. So that makes sense, but for even for pure states that are more than two qubits, we don't know so much, and these relationships have not been explored as much. And of course, this is important not just for foundational questions in quantum mechanics, but Bell inequalities have been used to analyze security of cryptography protocols, and we know that large-scale non-local quantum correlations can play a role in phase transitions and other many-body phenomena, superconductivity, and so on. So this is kind of an interesting question to ask. Before getting to the really n-qubit case, I'll talk about the simplest multi-qubit, as in not two-qubit system, which I can think of, which is three qubits. Three qubits are already interesting because from the entanglement point of view, you can have both bipartite as well as tripartite entanglement. Here, tripartite entanglement, there's actually a nice measure of it called the three-tangle, which is nice to visualize. So take the entanglement of qubit A with both BC, which is this whole intersection here. Remove the entanglement just between A and B, which is this part here. Remove the entanglement between just A and C, that part there, and you see what's left in the middle is really the true intersection, and that's what we call genuinely tripartite entanglement. This is known to be an entanglement a monotone, and this was formulated way back in 2000 by Wooders and co-workers. So that's a nice measure of tripartite entanglement that I'll use here. What about tripartite non-locality, meaning three-qubit Bell inequalities? Well, the setup is similar to the two-qubit case. Alice, Bob, and Charlie each have a qubit, and they make local measurements on their qubits. They pick one of two random directions to measure the spin, A or A prime for Alice, B or B prime for Bob, C or C prime for Charlie. And then if they do the experiments many, many times, they can then calculate the expectation value here of some correlation function. This one here for three qubits looks quite similar to the CHSH inequality. The form is similar. But what's special about this is that if you only allow for non-local correlations between just any two of the three qubits, then it has been shown that any such model would have an upper bound of four. So anything, if you get a correlation that's more than four, it means there must be non-local correlations between more than just two qubits. So that's sort of our test of genuine tripartite three-qubit non-locality. And this was constructed specifically to test for tripartite non-locality by Svetlikny back in 1987, but since then this hasn't really been used much, surprisingly enough. I'm sorry? Oh, it's if and only if. Yeah. So quantum mechanically, we find that, in fact, the upper bound is 4 root 2. So there's a regime that there would be a nylon violation. And as you would expect, the maximally entangled GHZ state is the one that achieves this maximum upper bound. Okay. So the question then is, just like in the two-qubit case, you can functionally relate non-locality to entanglement, can we also relate this tripartite measure of entanglement tau to this tripartite measure of non-locality S, which is this Svetlikny correlation function? So for three qubits, it's already a much harder problem than two qubits. For one thing, there's just more parameters in the problem for a general set of three-qubit states, and there are different classes of entanglement as well. So what I'm going to show you is a few interesting families of states where we can actually analyze this problem. Here's a couple. One is called the generalized GHZ states. You can see why. It's just 0, 0, 0, and 1, 1, 1 with some coefficient in front. When this is 1 over root 2, we have the GHZ state, of course. Another interesting state is the maximal slice states. These are very similar. As you can see, you have the 0001 part, you have the 111 state, but you have a little bit of the 110 state in there as well. So the third qubit has been rotated away from 1. These both are tripartite entanglement, meaning the tau, three-tangle measure, is not 0. And these both, in fact, intersect at one point, which is the active GHZ state, where this is 1 over root 2. And they also have some very interesting symmetry properties, which I won't go into now, but this was explored in this paper by Carter and Sudbury. So then the question is, do they also violate the Svetlik mean equality, since they both are tripartite entangled? So any guesses? Yes, no, maybe? Well, this is entanglement and non-locality, right? So what you expect is not what you get. So let's look at the three-qubit GHZ state first. The generalized GHZ state, GGHZ is what I'll call it from now on. So to calculate the maximum of this correlation function is a little bit complicated because each of the measurements are parameterized by two angles, theta and phi, and there's two measurements for each person, so that's 12 angles. So the correlation function is the problem is a maximization over 12 angles. So it's a 12 parameter optimization problem, at which point, you know, students look at you in horror and say, no, we can't do that. But in fact, it turns out that this state has so much symmetry in it that you can actually go through and rigorously maximize with respect to each of the 12 angles and get a final answer. And that's a lot of algebra. It's there in our paper, but it's not really fun to see in a talk. So I want to show you a slightly different way of visualizing the symmetries in the problem and see how you can find the maximum of this function. So the idea is this. For this particular set of states, the Svetlik-Ni function actually can be reduced to just two terms where I've lumped in all of those angles and 12 parameters in these coefficients C1 and C2. So I'll just flash it for you to see. They're not pretty. There's a lot of terms in there. But you can immediately see that there is some pattern there. The C1s have only cosines of the theta angles. And the C2s only are sines of the theta angles plus some cosines of the phi angles. But you can see because of this cosine-sine relation, if C1 goes up, C2 you would expect to go down and so forth. And in fact, we can rigorously find a relation between C1 and C2, a bound, an inequality, which is shown here. And just to visualize it, I've plotted this function here. Those are the dashed lines. And we can actually just pick a whole bunch of angles and plot the values of C1 and C2. And what you get is this diamond shape inside. And you can clearly see that this is an actual bound on the actual values of C1 and C2. It's tight at these four points, the bound. So now I can use this inequality to find a bound on my function f. And it looks very simple. I have these two terms. The first term is positive. And the second term can be positive and negative depending on which part here is bigger. And remember, the goal is to make this as big as possible, find the maximum f, and yet keep it tight, not a loose bound. So we're going to do that. If this part here is positive, then I want to make C1 as large as possible. And the maximum of C1 is 4. At that point, in fact, the bound is tight. So if I put that in there, I don't just get an upper bound on S. I actually get the maximum value. So the maximum is 4 cosine of 2 theta. The three-tangle function is sine squared 2 theta 1. Plugging that in here, I find a very simple relationship between f and tau, just as I wanted. That's for this regime. There's the other regime where this term is less than 0, in which case I want to kill off this negative part to keep the bound as large as possible. So I choose C1 to be 0. And again, at C1 equals 0, it's actually a tight bound. And so again, luckily, I get the actual maximum rather than just an upper bound. And that turns out to be 4 times square root of root 2 tau. So, putting it all together, here is the function, s as a function of tau. It's a little bit odd because you see there's this funny little, it must be correct though, right? So what's happening there? Well, this corresponds to when you make C1 maximum, that's like picking all the cosine angles to be 1. So that's all the measurements are along the z-axis. And then when C1 is 0, that's like picking all of the thetas to be the sine angles actually to be 1 and the cosines to be 0, in which case all the measurements are in the xy plane. Why is there that sudden funny change? it's certainly not obvious that as you just smoothly scan through the theta, there's a sudden abrupt change. And it's also not obvious from the form of the Svetlik-T function that you would expect this funny behavior, but it's there, and we know that the functional form looks like that. So we could do the same thing for the other set of states I mentioned, the maximal slice states. That's, again, a lot of algebra, and I don't have a nice visual way to show it to you, so I'll just spare you from that and give you the answer. And here it is. Oh, before I get there, notice also that the bound, the Svetlik-T inequality, was s greater than less than or equal to 4. So the violation doesn't happen all the time, only when the theta angle is larger than a half. So not all of these states can violate the Svetlik-T inequality, although the states have tripartite entanglement, they don't always violate the Svetlik-T inequality. So that's a bit strange. For the maximal slice states, here's what we get. This is the function S as a function of tau for the maximal slice states. The actual function looks like this. And notice that it's well behaved. There's no funny abrupt switching. And also, it's always greater than 4. So all states in that maximal slice state set violate the Svetlik-T inequality. So in a sense, they seem to have more non-local correlations maybe than these GHZ states, which look like they would be highly non-local correlated, right? So, and the other thing is, if you compare it to the two-qubit result, where you can relate the CHSH inequality to the concurrence, the square of the concurrence, which is the tau, you see that this functional form is very similar to the form for the slice states, not the GHZ states. So it's kind of an interesting thing about these slice states. Maybe they are kind of important, and we haven't really studied them so much. Okay, so what else can we do? Well, once we have this, we can look at a more general class that both these GHZ and slice states belong to, and that is parameterized by three parameters, this class. There's the theta 1 again, but then there's also the phi 2 and phi 3 terms here depend on these parameters theta 2, theta 3. Why this particular class? Well, it turns out that these are states that can be actually experimentally prepared using two pairs of entangled photons, linear optics, photodetection. You can actually prepare states of this kind, so they're kind of interesting. So these have actually been studied in the past before by Emery and Binacker, who did a numerical calculation of the maximum of F and plotted it as a function of tau. So here's what they got. They just sampled randomly a whole bunch of states in this family, and they got that. Yeah, notice anything? They didn't, of course, really look carefully at what states lie where, but they just found some numerical bounds here of this triangle, and if you compare their bounds to our formula, it is exactly the upper and lower bounds. So our states are extremal states, and what's interesting is this upper bound, which is the maximal slice states, those are the only states that achieve the upper bound. So they really are special. And in a larger set of all three-qubit states, we've also found that they are unique, that they have reached the maximum value allowed for the non-locality. So there's something interesting about these states, and we don't know why or what it is that it's telling us, but there's something there. So at this point, well, this is at three qubits. We could certainly explore other kinds of three-qubit states. But we want to also look at 4 qubits and more and get to the n qubit result. And the easiest such generalization to do is for the generalized GHZ states. So the states that look like 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1, we just do it for, let's say, 4 qubits. And what's nice is that we can use the same kinds of arguments. You still, although you get more and more and more terms in your Svetlik-T function, they always get nicely lumped into two effective terms, C1 and C2. We can do similar relationships and bounds from which we calculate a very similar kind of curve. And you see that the function we get, again, it's broken into two regimes. In one regime, you get a constant, which is kind of different from the three-qubit case. And in the other regime, you get this parabola here. I'm plotting it as a function of theta 1. And what's, again, important is that the violation only occurs in a certain regime here, above this blue line. We can carry on with this game, and here's some numerical results to show also, which includes the n equals 5 qubits. And there's always these two regimes, and each regime corresponds either to measurement along the z-axis or measurements in the xy plane. And not just that there's two regimes, but also what's really interesting is that the violation occurs for n equals 5. The inequality says that you have to be larger than 16. That's where the violation occurs. N equals 4, you got to be larger than 8. That's where the violation. N equals 3, you got to be bigger than 4. So the point at which the violation occurs is all the same. And in fact, what we've done most recently is we've derived a general formula for the n-qubit generalized GHZ states. Here's the formula. It's kind of simple. It's slightly different for the odd and even number of qubits. But what's important is that there's always these two regimes and the sudden switch from z-axis measurements to xy plane measurements. And the point at which the violation occurs is always exactly the same. What's the point? Well, I think I had it here. Corresponds to when the parameter theta 1 in here, sine of 2 theta 1 is 1 over root 2. So basically what we have is, we have all these sort of strange results because they are kind of counterintuitive. We don't really understand why we have this switching behavior. We don't know why the slice states are the ones that seem to be violating these inequalities the most. The next question, of course, is can we do n-qubit slice states, which is exactly what we want to do next, and see whether maybe what would be really interesting is to see if these n-qubit slice states are useful for certain applications, perhaps, or maybe they show up in some many-body phenomenon as some kind of indicator of something interesting in the system. So there's a lot of interesting questions. Two-qubit pure states, they really make sense. As soon as you go even to three qubits or more, we really have no idea what's going on, unfortunately. So that I'll stop and acknowledge my non-local collaboration here all over, literally around the world, thanks to Skype. So I should actually acknowledge Skype as well here. Thank you.